they were sound asleep anyway, so it was for coaching staff enjoyment.
Well, breathe easy. You at least cultured them a little bit if you gave them flesh. So that's a great call on your part.
But the problem with that movie is I laugh all the way through it, and I turn around and wonder why nobody else is laughing.
Right.
I'm a big believer in you practice the things that happen the most in a game, and having 9 bunt defenses is probably going to make you really average or below average at 9 bunt defenses.
You're dialed in to the ABCA's Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, connecting our coaches with some of the best baseball minds in our game. Now here's your host, Jeremy Schiedinger.
We are broadcasting live from the ABCA National Office here in Greensboro, North Carolina. You are dialed back into our podcast, and this is an exciting day for us here on the show. We're rolling out our Dugout Chatter episodes today, wasting zero time and making a huge splash. We're going to get to that here in just a second. But we're getting deeper into 2017, and with every new year comes new opportunities. It's a tremendous opportunity for us here to grow this podcast with more episodes, bring on new guests, approach new topics in our game, but the most important aspect of our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast has stayed the same. We will continue to deliver on certified audio gold for our coaches, connecting each of you with some of the very best baseball minds in our game. It's all about growth. It's all about development here at the ABCA, and it's all about you. Thanks for listening in, guys. Now, you might be wondering to yourself, what is this Dugout Chatter episode all about? Where is this going? So here it is, coaches. The feedback from our loyal listeners has been overwhelming, and it's very clear to us that you just love our traditional Calls from the Clubhouse shows. We're connecting you with great baseball men. We're talking through various aspects of our game, whether it be hitting or pitching or infield play, catching, but also giving you offshoot topics such as strength and conditioning or mental game and motivation, and even throwing in episodes that are reflections on our game from coaching legends like Skip Bertman or Jerry Weinstein. But we love these shows too, and what a perfect platform to gain extensive insight into how successful coaches are teaching the core fundamentals of our game, but also approach some special interest topics like the recruiting episode we did last year. And we plan to truly open the doors to some very unique topics even this year. And that could be evident by our first episode where we brought on 3 brand new head coaches and we talked about their transition into the big chair and running their own show. A little off the beaten path, but definitely an interest piece for our coaches. Now, these episodes are coupled with our own hashtag ABCA chat, which is our bi-weekly Twitter chat that allows our coaches from around the world to jump on the chat, share quality coaching insight, network, and engage with each other, and ultimately continue to grow our coaches, positively affect our players, and grow the game of baseball along with you. But here is where Dugout Chatter steps in. We want to deliver to each of you more content. That's our mission. More great insight and information, more opportunities for those personal growth junkie coaches out there for you to pop in your earbuds or pull us up in the car or in the office and fill that gap between shows. And we have countless tremendous coaches in our great association across every single level of baseball, from youth through high school and travel baseball and across all levels of college baseball. Some great coaches are out there. And these guys are out there being terrific stewards of our game, and we want to get you on the show. So Dugout Chatter is a fun and easy, laid-back approach to highlighting many of the great coaches that are out there. It's a way to truly dive into who these coaches are as people. I mean, pull out some real reflections on their path in the game, their highs and lows in coaching, plus explore who they are off the field. And we're certain that you're going to start to see, hey man, this dude is just like me. We've almost walked the same path. And it's like 2 guys pulled up buckets in the dugout to simply catch up. This is Dugout Chatter, and this is what the focus of our episodes will be about. And again, we're fired up to deliver this hashtag audio gold to you every single week. Our loyal listeners, we're going to continue to grow our reach, and you can help us do that. Spread the word, retweet, and share the link to our show. Let's continue to develop and strengthen this baseball coaches fraternity here at the ABCA, because we're part of something much bigger, much, much bigger than ourselves. And our ceiling is limitless. And so we're excited to move this forward along with each of you. But now let's get to the episode. We're talking today with the head coach at TCU, Jim Schlossnagel. What a great time to sit down and talk before the season kicks off and reflect on his path in the game. 28 years on the college level, 14 as the head coach there at TCU, but has really walked a very interesting path. And we get to find out some real ins and outs of who he is as a person, as a family man, and we get to hear very simply how he approaches coaching, what that means to him, some of the men that have really affected his life positively, and that's why we're here on the episode. So here it is, coaches, the first episode of our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, Dugout Chatter Edition, with the head coach at Texas Christian University, Jim Schlossnagel. Our teams are ready to take the field with this terrific show coming at you right now. All right, coaches, I wish I could say that we were broadcasting live down on the field at TCU, but I'm actually sitting here in Greensboro, North Carolina, while Jim Schlossnagel sitting in his office at Texas Christian University. Schloss, thanks for being on the call with us today, my man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited.
This is going to be good. We're kicking off the segment of Dugout Chatter, and it's an opportunity for us to kind of get to know you on a real personal level, maybe get some insight most guys may not know, or some interesting tidbits that coaches want to know about you, and they start to relate and see you differently. Now, as we kind of get into this, unanimous pick this year to win the Big 12. I think you're preseason one in just about every poll, three straight trips to Omaha. I mean, it never gets any easier, does it?
No, not at all. And that's, those things are, they're great. To me, when you have preseason rankings are usually a lot, no disrespect to the people that vote for those things, but they're usually program statements and necessarily more than team statements, because nobody knows, how the team's going to play throughout the course of the season. And, sure. And I think, we embrace that and appreciate it. We certainly know that plus however much money you have in your pocket right now is what you're going to be able to use to spend for breakfast today. So, it doesn't have a whole lot of value. It helps sell tickets and gets people excited, but it certainly can have a negative effect if you let it affect your preparation or mindset. So our team's like every other team. I always tell our guys there's probably 30 or 40 teams in Division I baseball that have a legit chance to win a national championship, and it's all going to depend on how they play, and especially later in the year, and how healthy they stay. I do feel like we're one of those 40 teams, but we're like everybody else. We have things we have to get better at, and guys we have to keep healthy, and we have to have a season to play. So we'll see how it plays out.
That's it. That's well said. And obviously, wish you the best of luck past this interview, moving into the season. But if you could, and I think so many times our coaches, they see a guy on TV, they see a program, they follow you along through social media, whatever it may be, and sometimes they forget that you once walked in their shoes. And going into 28th year in college baseball, your 14th there as head coach, if you could just give our coaches that are listening just a history of kind of your career in baseball and what got you to the head spot there at TCU.
Yeah, sure. It's certainly it's a career committed to coaching, that's for sure, because I definitely wasn't a very good player. I'm from Western Maryland and went to a little high school there, and I was a decent high school player at a small school in Western Maryland, whatever that means. And my high school football coach had a big impact on my life, and he was an All-American football player at Elon College, which is now Elon University. And I chose to visit there and went to school there and walked on the baseball team. I was on the baseball team as a player for a couple years, and then Rick Jones, who was the coach there at the time, who eventually became my boss at Tulane, and he called me to the side one day and said, hey, we both know you're not playing in the big leagues, and I said, yes, sir, and I was a journalism major at the time. All I ever wanted to do was write for Sports Illustrated.
Oh,
that
wow.
was my life goal. And he said, I think you'd make a really good coach. And I had never thought about coaching at all. He told me, he said, I'm going to give you, a week or 10 days to just be away from practice and see how that feels and think about it, talk with your family. I don't know if he was trying to run me off or what, but, I came back and of course, Elon really, they had no paid assistance or anything at that time. And I said, sure, I was usually – growing up, I was more mature than my age and had some forethought, said, okay, I certainly trusted his opinion and came back and said, all right, I'll do it. And it was funny is that was in, late October, early November, if I remember. And about a week after that, he announced he was leaving in the middle of the year to go be Jim Morris's assistant at Georgia Tech. And
wow.
And so, you know, that was tough, but the new coach came in, Mike Harden, and he was a really nice man from the area and a great communicator, really high energy coach, and he kept me on, and I just started getting really passionate about coaching, and basically what I would, you know, I was a student assistant coach, and I coached the pitchers, and my senior year I coached third base and the pitchers.
Wow.
And you know, we had a good NAIA program there, and every summer I would just go off, and when I wasn't, you know, I was literally driving on the road recruiting guys that were, if he was a junior college player, sometimes they were older than me. But when I wasn't doing that, I was working camp, and Coach Jones was at Georgia Tech, and I would work 5 or 6 consecutive weeks of baseball camp for Jim Morris at Georgia Tech, and then started working at Clemson as well in the summer, and I graduated my senior year, and they were going to give me a little, there was a little, basically a big closet in the gym that they turned into an apartment, and they were going to give me that to live in for free, and they were going to pay for my graduate school, not at Elon, but at North Carolina A&T in Greensboro.
Wow.
Which was about a 20-minute drive away, and they were going to give me a meal ticket into the cafeteria for free. And I was like, what else do you need?
Yes.
This is perfect.
Right.
And that would have been really the closest thing to a paid assistant coach that they were going to ever have. And I was totally planning on doing that. And in August, my very last day of my very last week of camp, I was working at Clemson, and Bill Wilhelm, mm-hmm. who guys now may not remember, but Bill Wilhelm was the coach at Clemson for, I believe, 36 years. He retired at 67, I believe. And it was and all of the changes that we had in college baseball, from scholarships went from 13 to 11.7 around that time, mm-hmm. and coaching staffs went from, you know, really as many people for the most part as you wanted to pay and hire, to one head coach, one full-time assistant, what they called a restricted earnings coach, mm-hmm. at that time, where that person could only make $12,000 during the academic year and $4,000 in the summer. And then this new thing called a volunteer coach. And Coach Wilhelm said, hey, we have this new thing. I'm losing a coach because he's been getting paid, and he doesn't want to go from getting paid to zero. And mm-hmm. I'm looking for a volunteer coach to help me with the pitching staff. And would you like to be that guy? And I was like, heck yeah. You know, 22 years old. I don't know. That was right before my birthday, so I might have been 21 when he offered me the job.
It's unbelievable.
And in the summer of 92, I said, I'll be here. You just tell me when to be here. And I told Elon that's what I was going to do, and they were great, and my parents were supportive. And so I moved to Clemson. And Randy Mazey, who's mm-hmm. now the head coach at West Virginia and who used to work on our staff here at TCU, he and I lived together. Jack Leggett was the full-time assistant coach, and Bill Wilhelm was the coach. And
wow.
And I had my teaching degree. I had changed my major from journalism to education, and I would substitute teach whenever I could to make a little bit of money. And, of course, I had saved up my camp money, and I just lived there in Clemson, and the fall of 92 and the spring of 93, I was coaching at Clemson, and I just thought that was the big leagues, and which it felt like. And we won the ACC tournament that year and went to the NCAA tournament in a regional back in the old 48 team field at Knoxville. And then that summer, Coach Wilhelm retired. Jack Leggett became the head coach. Randy Mazey left to be the head coach at Charleston Southern. A guy named Tim Corbin came in. To Clemson, and I was going to stay as the volunteer coach, but then Coach Jones got the head coaching job at Tulane, and I moved to New Orleans to be that to move up one step and be that restricted earnings coach, and that was a great thing. And I was there for 8 years at Tulane. We went to the College World Series in 2001. I met my wife in New Orleans. We had both of my children in New Orleans, and then about a week after the season ended in Omaha in 2001. I was offered the head coaching job at UNLV and moved. I had never really been to Las Vegas and moved to Vegas and coached there 2 years. And then, was very blessed to have the opportunity to come to TCU. And now we've been here for almost 14 years. So it's been great, but I've definitely touched every possible step all along the way. That's, you know, from a coaching standpoint, that's for sure.
It's amazing to hear. It's almost like a huge chess game, and that's what it is, and that's what coaches start to see. Guys are moving and interchangeable into certain spots, and this guy gets this job and brings him along. And it's interesting. You're talking through a couple of things or a couple of points, and I wonder if any of these are where my question's going, Jim. But is there maybe an aha moment? Maybe it was being the student assistant and, like I said, coaching third base for Coach Harden, or was there a moment getting to Clemson where it just hit you and you woke up and went, this is exactly, like you said, you had this journalism dream for so long, but this is exactly what I want to do for the rest of my life. Was there any of those moments?
I can't remember any specific second, but and that's a great question. No one's ever asked me that. I mean, I definitely just fell in love with it from a, you know, it gave me an opportunity to be, you know, around the competition. But I would have to say just my time at Clemson with Coach Leggett and Coach Wilhelm and Coach Mazie. I mean, I really learned a lot. Certainly Rick Jones is the one who's had the biggest impact on my career, and we can talk more about that later.
Mm,
but
sure.
If you're asking about an aha moment, just being around that level of program and talent, you know, we had, I think, four or five major league players off that 93 Clemson team, and the intensity of elite college baseball, no disrespect to Elon, but when I got a taste of, you know, playing Georgia Tech in a three-game series, and Jason Varitek was behind the plate, and Nomar Garciaparra, that was his freshman year, and or going to Florida State, and Mike Minkiewicz was playing first base, and they had three first-round pitchers, and just being around that level of baseball and that, you know, the atmospheres that were in the ACC at that time and the ACC tournament, which was in Greenville, South Carolina at the time. It was just awesome. I'm like, man, there's no doubt. This is what I want to do, and it may take me a while to eventually, you know, be a head coach at a place that has this kind of support and this kind of following. But, you know, now that, you know, again, nobody's ever asked me that, but I would have just to give you an answer. I think that just that time there kind of really lit a fire under me to want to coach at the highest level.
Wow, I appreciate you diving into that. That's a great insight for our coaches. And you know, if you coach long enough, Schloss, you hit highs and you hit lows. And I'm just interested, can you pick out a high moment for you that you think back, maybe you're just driving and you reflect on it and it puts a smile on your face, but also those low moments, and then I'll follow up as we dive a little bit deeper, but a high and a low moment in your coaching career for us.
Sure. You know, there's been so many highs, and you hate we're in this for the kids, and no doubt about it. But there's no question that there's times on the field that are just, you know, elation at the highest level. And
sure.
I would have to say a couple of them are the first time at TCU that, you know, we won the, you know, super regional. And in 2009, we won our first regional. We go to the University of Texas and we lose the first game, win the second game, and we're a game away. And we lose game three to, you know, Coach Garrido's great team. And then the next year, the exact same scenario. We win a regional. We have to go back to Texas. We felt like both teams should have been national seeds and not playing each other. But in states like Texas and California and Florida, and you know, you that's what you deal with. Mm-hmm. And you know, we won the first game. They blew us out of the water the second game. And if you talk to Coach Garrido, he'll tell you one of the best teams, most talented teams he's ever had was his 2010 team. And then that Sunday afternoon, I think it was, we just played great baseball in a phenomenal environment, and we finally won that, you know, that game to go to Omaha. And just for everything that we had, the people had invested at TCU in the sport of baseball, going from almost having dropped the program at TCU. There was actually a meeting, you know, in the late 90s where they, you know, TCU was very, you know, they weren't committed at all to athletics in any form, but at the highest level, but especially baseball. And they considered dropping it, and they just said, well, you know, we either got to drop it or we need to try to be good at it. Mm-hmm. And they reinvested in the program. And so getting to the World Series, you know, even though we all know, you know, once you get there, you want to win it, but it's such a tough thing to win a super regional or even just getting a regional these days. But anyway, just to win that last game, and I felt like we justified the commitment that the school had made years before. And so, you know, that was a great time. You know, another high for me has been my two opportunities to wear USA across my chest. In 2006, I'm a big believer in USA baseball and the collegiate national team, and real thankful to guys like Paul Seiler and Eric Campbell that have given me opportunities to be a part of that. And 2006, Tim Corbin was the manager and I was the pitching coach, and we won a gold medal in Cuba. And with, you know, I think 20 of our 22 players have played in the major leagues off that team. And then in 2013 to be the head coach, of the USA team and represent the country in Japan, and then come back and play so well against Cuba. We swept Cuba, you know, five straight games, and there's big leaguers off both teams obviously now. And that was just a great accomplishment. You know, when they're playing the national anthem and you got USA across your shirt, man,
right.
it's a different feeling. So, I would say, you know, on the field, those are the highs. And the lows, you know, two stick out for me. This past summer, one of our incoming recruits was tragically killed in a car accident here in Fort Worth, and right at the tail end of summer school. You know, he had been here. Drew Medford is a local Fort Worth guy, and from Pascal High School, which is literally about a quarter of a mile from our field, and a good player and great young man. And he, you know, at 4 o'clock or Thursday afternoon, he is he's in my office. He's just got finished playing catch in the outfield, and he's so excited and asking questions and trying to do the right things and wants to know what he needs to do to be better. And at 3 o'clock that night in the morning, I get a phone call that he's been killed in a car accident. And so that, you know, that kind of pain and just tragedy for surrounding a young life is not, you know, not something that I would ever wish on anybody. So that would be the number one low for sure in my coaching career. And another thing, you know, I guess the other one would be certainly way down the list compared to that. But
right.
our 2013 season here was not very good. It's the only year we haven't won at least a portion of a conference championship, and it's the only year we haven't been in a regional. And we were 29-28. And I don't say it was a low because of our record. I say it was a low because I did a really poor job of just managing a coaching staff and the program in general. That it didn't have the structure that it should have, and a lot of things came out of that to make me a better coach. And you know, not to say that, you know, since then we've been to three straight World Series, but I think that you know, that's certainly a part of it. But had I known we were going to Omaha three straight times, I might have not sweated 2013
right.
as much. But those are two lows, you know, to answer your question, that I hope to never have to go through again.
Well, let's stay on that just for a little more insight. In terms of those lows, Jim, how'd you get through them? I mean, what do you lean on at times like that? Now, those are, like you said, two drastically different situations, passing of a player, but, you know, a loss on a field or a season that you felt like you lost. But, I mean, how did you get through those? What did you lean on those moments?
Well, with Drew, certainly, you know, I mean, you know, I just lean on my own personal faith and know that, you know, Drew's, you know, life on this earth is very fleeting, and not to impose my faith on anybody else, but there's certainly there's an eternity ahead that's much better than – that's nothing we can even imagine, in my opinion, on this planet. And so just leaning on that and knowing that, you know, just the 18 years that Drew was on this earth, he made people better. He was had bright, fiery red hair, and he was just a neat guy to be around. So just leaning on my family and my faith and certainly trying to be there for his family as best we could. The 13 season, you know, I don't know. I mean, getting through it wasn't fun. I don't. It was just. I think the thing I remember is it's caused for me to have a lot of self evaluation, which is good.
Sure.
Which I think you need to do after every season. Self evaluation of the program, how the importance of chemistry on a coaching staff, the importance of a lot of things when you're hiring coaches and allowing them to do their job, and And, you know, we had a great staff, but I didn't do a good job at all of managing that staff and putting everybody in the best position to have success. And so I really learned a lot from that.
That's the certified audio gold we're looking for, Sloss. I mean, here's somebody in your position to really critically evaluate yourself in that way and then look what happened in the years following that is really powerful, man. I appreciate you welcoming that on the show.
Sure.
I may know this answer. You referenced it earlier, but let's put you in the same body right now and you're not coaching at TCU. What would you be doing?
Well, you know, again, I always wanted to I was a journalism major. I wanted to write for Sports Illustrated. I went to work on that in my sophomore year of high school. I started working for my hometown paper in Hagerstown, Maryland, and I started out just answering the phones on I was a high school basketball player, so I would play my game on a Tuesday or Friday night, and as soon as the game was over, because I had no social life, I would go straight to the hometown paper, and I'd sit down, and I would, back then, obviously, there's no internet, anything like that, and when a high school basketball game was over, the high school coach would call in the box score, and I would take the box score, and they taught me how to put it in the computer, and it would show up in the newspaper the next day. And then I graduated from that in a year to they would send me out to cover high school sports. And I was, you know, covering state high school softball championships and American Legion baseball games that I wasn't playing in. And so then I went to college and wanted to do the same thing. And so that's all I ever wanted to do. Seeing now how that industry's changed where, you know, newspapers are dying every day and it's more about the internet. Maybe I would still be doing that, but certainly having gone through this coaching thing, you know, I think probably, you know, maybe be involved in some sort of business where you're managing people and trying to move, you know, a group of people towards a common goal. So maybe I'd be in business or something like that.
That's interesting. All right. Now this one is a really diving in deep here, but and maybe this is a better question for your wife, Cammie, or your kids, but hidden talents. What do you do at home that, you know, people don't even know that you're really good at, or what are some hobbies that you have that are outside of leading the Horned Frogs?
Yeah, I'm not really good at this one. To be real honest with you, I mean, I grew up hunting and fishing with my dad. My dad was worked for the United States Department of Agriculture for about 45 years, and so he had access to a lot of people's farms and their ponds and their lakes and their woods to hunt in. And so I did that growing up till I was about 13 or 14. But then I was so engrossed in, you know, I'm a big believer in kids playing multiple sports. And, you know, I played where I was from at that time, you played football in the fall, you played basketball in the winter, and you played baseball in the spring and summer. And so I got to the point where, you know, I didn't want to miss a game or miss practice or not be with the team to go hunting and fishing. So those hobbies kind of went by the wayside. I've never been a golfer. I've never been interested in it. I appreciate people who are good at it. I appreciate the clothes. I appreciate the beauty of the courses and stuff like that. So, you know, here's my statement on that is that I've always felt like, and this is probably not healthy, but if I get 3 or 4 hours to kill, I'm away from my family so much. I just want to be with them. And whether that, you know, sometimes I'll take my son fishing every now and then, or maybe it's go to a movie, or maybe it's just be at home and watch a movie or play a game, you know, stuff like that. And I am, you know, I'm a guy that believes this profession is not a profession. It's a lifestyle. And, and you know, I live literally 500 yards. I live right across the street from our stadium, right at the end of our parking lot. When you pull out of the parking lot of Lupton Stadium at TCU, you literally pull into my driveway. And so people think that's weird. There's a lot of coaches that need separation, and I can understand that. I don't need that. So in terms of hobbies, I love going to a movie. I can play the piano, just my right hand.
See, that's the stuff we got to know.
There you go. I mean, I can read a sheet of music and play it, but only in my right hand. I've never took a lesson or, I can do that because I actually played the trumpet, in middle school. I didn't play in high school, but so I can read music. But beyond that, I love being around, my team. I love being around the players. I love being at the ballpark. I enjoy being in the office and try and find ways to help our program be better.
That's great. I think two things out of that. One is there's a lot of coaches listening. They're going to go, you mean you pull out of your stadium and you pull into your driveway? That's awesome. So there's a lot of guys mm-hmm. that think that's great. Also, we're going to need a picture of you with the trumpet because that's a tweetable moment that we can, that we can add in. To,
yeah,
for
I don't know. That's blackmail material
yes,
right there.
Yes, it is. I'll see what I can't dig up. So this is an interesting one, and one that a few coaches, when we were putting out this dugout chatter, and if you're just checking in with us, guys, we've got Jim Schlossnagel, head coach at TCU, and we're talking about, I think this is an interesting topic here, funniest story that's ever happened to you on the road with your team, and whether it's bus breaking down or something interesting happened at the hotel, but what's the funniest story from all the teams you've coached over 28 years that's happened to with you and your team?
Oh, my goodness.
Could be a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you could fill up a week's worth of podcasts on stuff like this. Obviously some you can tell and some that aren't very appropriate.
That's right.
When you're dealing with 18 to 22 year old boys, but the one that sticks out is not necessarily funny. It's just a great moment. I believe it was 2009, 8 or 9, because I think Matt Carpenter was on the team, but we're in the Mountain West Conference. And we had a 3-game series at the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs, which I love that trip because you have such great respect for the academy and the cadets and the kids and the coaches and everything they have to go through. You know, it's such a polar opposite experience than what our guys at TCU are going through. And so we pull into Colorado Springs and it is snow upon snow. And they took us to their indoor facility, so our Thursday evening workout was indoors, and they thought maybe the snow was going to get through, but you're at such a high elevation that you never really know right. what the weather's going to be in the next 10 minutes, you know, let alone for the next 3 days. So we wake up on Friday morning, and it is a foot of snow and continuing to snow, and the Air Force coach calls and says, hey, we're shut down for the weekend. And I get with our travel person, and she says, you know, there's no flights until our flight Sunday night. What do you want to do? And I said, we're going home. We're not sitting here for 3 days.
Right.
And so we busted back 15 hours from Colorado Springs to Fort Worth. And some people have been on 15-hour bus rides, so that's not a big deal. But
right.
what we had to do, there's no DVD player on the bus, just VHS tapes. And so we went to Walmart and we bought about 8 VHS movies, which luckily they still had some.
Right.
And we headed back. And, you know, they have the laws for the bus drivers. And so about, I don't even know where we were, but in the middle of the night, we had to have a bus from Fort Worth meet us because the bus driver had to sleep.
Right.
And we didn't want to wait a night. So in the middle of the night, we had to unload one bus and put all of our stuff on another bus and then make our way back to Fort Worth. And it was miserable. The bus couldn't have stunk more than ever. And but you look back on it, man, that's a great story. And mm-hmm. still people talk about the things that happened on that bus and the movies we watched and stuff like that. I don't remember what happened in the season, but I know that that was a great time.
Well, that's the follow-up. What are some of those cinematic classics you guys picked up?
I knew you were going to say that.
Exactly.
I mean, VHS tapes, I mean, they were probably things that I liked, but the players didn't, like Fletch and like Tin Cup and maybe some
the classics.
Fast Times at Ridgemont High, some stuff that was still available on VHS tapes, but yeah, I mean, they were sound asleep anyway, so it was for my enjoyment, coaching staff enjoyment.
Well, breathe easy. You at least cultured them a little bit if you gave them Fletch, so that's a great call on your part.
But the problem with that movie is I laugh all the way through it, and I turn around and wonder why nobody else is laughing.
Right. Well, I think a lot of coaches can empathize with that one. All right, last silly question before we get to two that I really want to ask you, but can we get Evan Skaug to wear an undershirt this year? Is that something that the staff has talked about with him? I've never seen a guy that embraces the no undershirt, dirt caked approach than Evan does. It's impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, he and Luke and Baker, they're the same. They don't like that undershirt thing. So, you know, I'm not a fan of it. but it, you know, it goes to what, you know, they're grinding type kids and they're great students. They do everything right. And I'll tell you one thing I've learned over my career. I used to have rules for rules and standards for standards. And there are some things like kind of in parenting, you have to pick and choose your battles. And at the end of the day, you know, what kind of kid is he? And is this one little thing that's going to make him a little unique or helps him to feel comfortable? Is it really that big of a deal? And as a coach, if it's a real big deal to you, then you address it. If it's not, or if it has become not a big deal, then it's okay. You know, to thine own self be true, and I've definitely had to learn that over my time.
That's a great call. So here's the last couple questions, and I think one that you've mentioned a couple names, and just interesting. You know, you hear the sports talk guys, and they talk about the Mount Rushmore in their sport, but I'm more interested, I think, where we want to dive this question to you is the three or four guys that have impacted you in this game. I mean, we could easily go parents, and we could go the wife, we could go that route, but I mean, in terms of baseball coaches, who are the three or four guys that have impacted you? Who's on your Mount Rushmore?
Well, just for me personally, number one is Rick Jones, you know, who now retired coach from Tulane, who, you know, got me in coaching, and I owe everything really to him because he you know, especially for our situation at TCU, my 8 years at Tulane in a private school with a high cost of attendance, and you know, we didn't have any extra, you know, need-based aid or any extra funny money that some schools have these days, and we don't have that at TCU, much to, you know, people don't believe us when I say that, but we don't have that. It's straight baseball scholarship. And so just learning how to run and operate a program at a high level, both on and off the field at a private school, I learned that off of Rick Jones. You know, Bill Wilhelm from Clemson, you know, gave me the first opportunity in Division I baseball, and I certainly learned, you know, a ton of things from him and what ended up being his last year of coaching. Jim Morris, now the coach at Miami, but, you know, I knew him most or was around him the most when he was at Georgia Tech, and I was working his camps for 5 and 6 weeks a summer, and he would grab, you know, he would pick me up after camp, even though I was just a lowly, you know, volunteer coach at, well, not volunteer coach at Clemson. I wasn't there yet. I was at Elon and student assistant. And I'd ride with him to a, you know, he'd go watch a guy pitch in the summer, and we would just talk recruiting and have great conversation. And he was running great camps. I learned how important camp is to a program and the structure of camp and how to run a good camp where you're just not sucking money from people, but you're giving something to the kids. I learned a lot from him. So the guys that directly affect me, and there's been a ton of assistant coaches and coaches I've worked with on the USA teams that have had a huge impact. But those three would be the most direct. And then indirectly during my time at Tulane, I just got to watch, you know, Coach Burtman at LSU,
right.
Skip Burtman. And I never worked for him. You know, we've had some conversations, and he's done and said some really nice things for me during my time at TCU. But just watching him not just win the 5 national championships, which, you know, we had to be the brunt of a lot of those wins when I was at Tulane, but just watch how he built and maintained a program that was so relevant in the community. And I spoke at the convention this year and about goals and standards. I'm not a big believer in goals anymore. I only had one when I was the coach here, and that was to build a program that was successful on and off the field and relevant in the community. And I learned that from Coach Burtman, you know, and he's a great baseball man, but he was very in tune with the fans and building a booster club and generating excitement around the program and selling tickets and everything, an all-encompassing program versus just the team. And so any Mount Rushmore of college baseball has to have Skip Burtman on it.
Yeah.
But for me personally, you know, he would definitely be on mine.
That's great. And so the last question I got for you, if we could build the ABCA time machine, and maybe we'll look into this, we'll see how our numbers go.
Yeah.
If we could take you back and we could put you right now in front of that 21-year-old, because a student assistant, 21-year-old, at that time you're not even Schloss, you're just Jimmy. I mean, what lessons and advice would you give that young cat that would maybe help prevent him from some heartache down the road that you learned the hard way?
Sure. You know, I think the first one would be, especially as an assistant coach, but even as a head coach, is, you know, you got to be where your feet are. And people hear that all the time. And you know, you want assistant coaches or coaches that are upwardly mobile. They're invested in the profession, and they definitely want to be a head coach. But those things have to be, a result of your hard work. And if you're constantly, looking over the fence to see where the grass is greener, then you're going to miss out on some awesome relationships and experiences, and you're probably not going to end up where you want. And a lot of coaches tend to make decisions based on money, and I've never been that way, but I try to tell young coaches, if you'll wait as long as you can to base your career decisions on money and just base them on what's the best job, what's where can I win, where can I attach myself to a winner, then you'll end up making more money than you ever dreamed you could have in the sport of coaching. So that, be where your feet are and invest in where you currently are today would be my first thing. The second thing is, from a baseball standpoint, the one thing I've learned over 27 years, and again, this is just me, it's not the way, it's just our way, is I don't like it when coaches try to reinvent the game. And that doesn't mean that you can't look for ways to improve or ways to, teach, for example, hitting better. But the game's been played kind of a certain way for a really long time. And I'm a big believer in you practice the things that happen the most in a game. And having 9 bunt defenses is probably going to make you really average or below average at 9 bunt defenses versus, when the other team's bunts, if it's a good bunt on their part, pick it up and throw it to first base. And if it's a bad bunt, then you have a chance to get a lead out. Just things like that that I think, especially young coaches, and it's all out of desire to improve, is study the game, but you're not going to reinvent the sport. And and the fundamentals of the sport that have been the same for 100 plus years or whatever are still the fundamentals of the sport. And then the last thing is to be incredibly intentional, especially when you become a head coach, with the culture of your program. And, culture beats talent, especially when the talent's equal. And so just to really invest in that, define it, make it very, very specific, make it easily explainable. So everybody associated with your program, not just the players, but the trainer or whoever else, you don't have to have the same opinion, but you need to be preaching the same gospel. And everybody's got to be on the same page as to what's important in the program. And you have to find ways every single day to keep reminding people and reinvesting in that, whether it be, someone else coming in to talk to your team, whether it be a video you can come up with, whether it be a motivational quote on your practice plan. Those are the things that are going to carry your program over time. To have the, in my opinion, the success that you eventually want.
I mean, there are so many nuggets in this, Jim. I can't thank you enough for jumping on our first ever Dugout Chatter episode of our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. I tell you what, I'll speak on behalf of a lot of coaches, man. Your teams are always well coached. You guys are gritty. You're tough. You're fun to watch. We wish you all the luck this year, and hopefully we'll cross paths here soon. But thanks for the time today, Schloss. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, man, you're really welcome. I'm fortunate. We have a great staff here with Bill Moziello, Kirk Sarlos, Zach Etheridge. You guys are amazing, and I really appreciate what you're doing, things that you're doing to advance our profession and the ABCA with the clinics across the country and now stuff like this. I mean, this is awesome, and very humbled and honored to be a part of it. So thanks for having me.
You get the Fort Worth community ready. We're coming with Barnstormers here in a couple years, and we're excited to get down there with you. All right.
We'll be ready.
Best of luck to the Frogs, man. Good luck.
All right. Take care.
And just like that, our Dugout Chatter episodes are off and rolling, and we could not have found a better guest to kick this project off with. We're talking about a longtime loyal member of the ABCA and the head coach at Texas Christian University, Jim Schlossnagel. This was such a fun episode, and we appreciate Schloss being so transparent with us. I'm still working and digging to find a pick of Jim playing his trumpet. I have my sources working overtime on all that for all of us. But this was great, and again, just like a friendly conversation in the dugout, some great nuggets of info throughout the entire episode from one of the truly great baseball men in our game. So thanks again for the time, Schloss. We really appreciate it. We wish you and the Horned Frogs team this year the absolute very best as you approach the 2017 season. Now, this show is simply on fire, and we want to make sure that you catch all of the new releases this year. Here's one way. stay tuned to our website, abca.org. If you click on the resources tab at the top, Calls from the Clubhouse podcast link will be right there waiting for you. If you click on it, you can scroll through all the great content and guests we've had over the last year and a half. You can also subscribe to our show on your iPhone or your Android devices, and every week when a new episode comes out, it'll show up on your phone for you. Just pop in the earbuds, plug it into your car, take this content on the road with you, but it's right there for you. And one of the very best lines that came from this past week as we got back into the fold of getting our Calls from Clubhouse podcast out, several coaches reached out and said, we love these. They're perfect for Automobile University. We're talking about recruiting trips in your car or just away trips on the bus, driving to and from the office, but also working at your office on your computer. These are for you, guys, the personal growth junkie coaches that are out there. These are for you, and you can listen to them on your time. We just don't want you to miss out on any of the great guests we have, any of the great topics and information. You can also stay tuned to our Twitter account, at ABCA1945, and you'll always see the release of every episode coming at you on Tuesdays. And then follow us during the week as we'll post quotes from the podcast. There's links to hear our show. Remember, the podcast is all about connecting you with the very best baseball minds in our game, giving you tremendous insight and content. So we want to make sure, stay tuned, dialed in. These are for you. Now, you might have seen some activity on Twitter as recent as last night, and maybe you truly didn't know what was going on or what it's all about. But what you saw was hashtag ABCA chat on Twitter. They follow the release of our traditional Calls from the Clubhouse show, and we're moving back to Monday nights, always at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And here's the quick fix. Very simple. Search hashtag ABCA chat. On your phone or your computer, you'll click on latest at the very top, and boom, you're wide open. You're in. We post questions from our account revolving around the topic of the podcast roughly every 5 to 10 minutes, and you have an opportunity to share your thoughts, your opinions, videos, practice plans, ideas, stuff that's relative to the questions, but also you can engage and connect and network with every single coach that's on our chat. And if you're watching it, there's retweets, there's likes, they're just flying around, but it's all about helping create a platform for our coaches to grow themselves, develop and sharpen their coaching philosophies, and bring all of us together for one night. It's 1 hour, guys, and it'll help grow our game. It's an awesome time. We hope that you're looking forward to checking in on our next hashtag ABCA chat, Monday, February 20th, again at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll be waiting for you on hashtag ABCA chat. Now, make sure you're following us on Twitter, at ABCA1945. You can also find me on there as well, at CoachSheets3, or you can reach me directly by email, sheets@abca.org. That's sheets@abca.org. Coaches, if you love this episode, or maybe there was a particular quote that just really stuck out to you or something that really hit you hard, please let us know. Tweet at us. We love engaging with you guys. We'd love to get your feedback. The emails and the tweets and the messages, guys, have been outstanding. But again, we want to hear how this hashtag audio gold is helping each of you guys develop. We want to hear about the chat, how much you're gaining from these things, but also what you're doing with your programs and how the ABCA can help you do that. We look forward to connecting with each of you guys real soon. And our hope is that if you're listening and you're taking in this great baseball knowledge, you're already a part of the ABCA. But if not, you should truly think about joining the Baseball Coaches Fraternity here at ABCA. It's only $45, but it'll certainly prove to be the very best investment you've ever made in your coaching career. And if you're looking for more information, head over to our website, abca.org. You can check out the extensive list of membership benefits. And again, we're working hard to be great for you guys. This is completely about you as coaches, and we hope you join the ABCA real soon. So the audio gold is coming at you each week now. Let's start getting a routine. On Tuesdays, we release our new episode, and we're fired up to grow the game along with each and every one of you guys. Thank you for listening in and supporting the show. And until next week, coaches, keep growing, keep developing. We wish you and your clubs the very best, and thank you for what you're doing for the game of baseball.